how to create a collective heritage, a joint heritage in a company whilst not negating individual heritages and individual aspects of people's lives. It's a very, very important one, and one that I think we do need to chat about, because I think there's a tendency to say, no, we are one. But in fact, we might be that, but it doesn't mean that we can't have our own unique aspects.
Howard, I think, especially in South Africa, we're, and I mean this with a lot of sincerity, that we're actually blessed that we're such a diverse cultural makeup. And it's not something I really believe that we have embraced, or something that we've looked at, because we've always looked at the negative side of it. Everybody's looked at the negative side of affirmative action and previously disadvantaged and BEE, and these have become more negative than positive. But I think if we strip all of that away and we take that out, not to say that it's not important, but we look beyond that and we look at our organizational makeups. And if you had to really assess the people based on their heritage, based on their culture, you don't actually realize what a rich knowledge base you have, but we don't spend enough time exploring and understanding different cultures. And something that I found, as you start working with teams outside of the work environment and you start talking to them about non-work related things and you learn about their history and their culture, you form a bond and you build a mutual respect for people because you understand where they're coming from. And I think that is something that makes me very passionate about the work I do in different organizations. And even more so, you know, I know we're talking about South African heritage, but I've done a lot of business outside of South Africa, especially on the continent of Africa in different countries. And I'll never forget it's an age old saying that everybody looks at Africa as a country. Right. Africa is not a country. Mm. Africa is a continent made up of 54 individual countries with different cultures, different heritages, different backgrounds, and you need to understand those to engage. So for me, it's fundamental that we take a step back and we assess, is this a asset or a liability? And I strongly believe it's an asset, but it's an untapped asset within our organization.
You know, one of the experiences certainly that we had living overseas, and I've lived both in Israel and in America, is that when you bring something a little bit different, it adds, it creates an interest, it creates something that just adds layers of richness to any environment, and we should be embracing it. I think there's nothing more exciting in a work environment or any environment in having a little bit of diversity. It's a very, very exciting thing, and it doesn't mean that you can't have a defined and united goals. So we can, you know, we're smart enough and nuanced enough to function on a number of levels. Before I carry on, Ansan says, a lovely song, We Are One. Which version is this? This is the original. It's Cam Clark, Charity Sanoy, and Ladysmith Black Mambusa. So it is one of the originals. It is really, really a great one indeed. So, Nati, your thoughts on what Ian is saying?
That's very true, because bringing in diversity can actually, because a lot of people think that it makes everything difficult and complicated. But actually understanding where different people are coming from can actually make things easier for the organization.
Absolutely right. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Ian. Joining me in a studio, and we are talking about Heritage Day. Ian, you're saying, and talking about heritage, there's a whole new trend to have your DNA tested to see exactly what your heritage really is.
So Howard, I'm sure many listeners, including myself, have attempted at some point in time, either out of curiosity or because of a school project, to put together a family tree. And for me, I found it quite exciting but equally challenging, and I've often ended up at a dead end. You know, the records just go back so far, and then it takes a lot of work and effort, and sometimes we just get lazy. But it's quite interesting now, and this was brought to my attention by a family member who lives in Australia, who directed me to a site called Ancestry.com. And what they're offering now is they're offering a DNA test. So it's literally a saliva test. You do a saliva test and you send it through to them, and then they send you back a whole bunch of information, which includes your ancestry DNA plus 26 personal traits that you've got. And it invites you to match your DNA with others on the network. So they're building a network of all this DNA, and they're helping you to build your family tree. So the interesting thing that I found about this is we have typically, well, me personally have typically used traditional routes to try and track my ancestry and my family tree, using records or speaking to, aunties, uncles, cousins and all that, but that's limited. Whereas this is using exponential data to connect people around the world, and they can go down to levels of third and fourth cousins. So it's
interesting.
Fascinating.
I'm actually here listening to it and thinking I'm a bit ambivalent. So I've done the DNA testing in terms of my own health, genetic makeup, things like that. And I thought it was quite interesting how much I've used of it. If I look back, you know, a couple of months, you know, I've used some of it, and it's been very, very useful in some ways. But I wonder if, you know, even when I did it, I had the option of looking at my heritage, and I chose not to. I don't know why. Maybe I just think I've got enough cousins, but and I'm not sure that I'm looking for more cousins, but because I can barely manage to be a decent cousin to the ones that I do have. But I just wonder, I don't know why I'm not particularly drawn. Like I do understand heritage in terms of family trees, and I value that quite highly. But for some reason, this doesn't appeal to me. Does it appeal to you, Sanati?
It actually does.
Yeah, because you want to find out that you're German. So that
Thank you.
Yes, so that you can go to Germany and get a sick day for having a hangover.
That's all I want.
that's your aspiration. And drive a BMW because it's part of your heritage.
Are you not curious to find out maybe if there's some Kenyan?
I know that there's Kenyan. I know when I run, I feel Kenyan. So now I don't want to be told otherwise, actually. What happens if I find out that there's no Kenyan running in deep within me?
You know, they might be Ethiopian, and then you might be underperforming.
Right. Yeah,
I can tell you without knowing anything, I'm underperforming. You're right.
But Howard, it's an interesting thing just picking up on that about what do we want to know and what can't we know or what aren't we able to know? And many of you will probably remember that movie, A Few Good Men, where Jack Nicholson has that famous scene where he says, "We can't handle the truth." Mm. And it's quite interesting because just going back to the whole DNA testing, my family and I, we've been through a whole batch of genetic counseling for other reasons. And, it's quite interesting. I was talking to the geneticist and saying, wow, this is like fantastic that you can trace back. And there's a whole lot of studies. If you look out there and you really go into this field, they can map out your whole genome when you're born. So like literally they can take an infant that's just been born. They can map out their genome and they can, with quite good accuracy, they can predict what your outcome or what your life's going to be like in terms of what you will be susceptible to from an illness perspective. And I said to this woman, I said, this is fantastic. Why don't we all get like a user manual or that kind of thing when we're born? And she actually said the reality of the situation is we cannot handle that as individuals psychologically, because if you are told when you're young or at an age where you're still trying to figure life out and all of that, that you've got a predisposition to a certain illness. Instead of taking like positive actions to try and be healthy and do that, you'll actually
almost give in.
You'll give in. And they did a study with patients who had Alzheimer's. So they took two groups, and the one group they told that you have a predisposition to getting Alzheimer's, and then the other group they didn't tell anything. And when they started doing testing, like memory tests, they found that the ones that had been told were actually performing worse because they'd kind of given up.
I have absolutely no doubt
about it. So that's the risk also.
Yeah, and I can tell you, somebody like me, I often speak about the fact that I'm very suggestible. So if I'm told that there's a side effect on a medication, I'm going to experience that.
Yeah.
So I think that's a problem. It's interesting because whilst you were talking, I was thinking about a situation with a friend of mine who he's non-South African. He was at the time living in Israel, a British guy, and he knew that he was adopted. He didn't know very much more about his family. He knew that his parents were married and Jewish, but that's all he knew. And we'd often have these conversations, and I'd say to him, "Aren't you curious to find out more about your family?" Because it was up to him to initiate it. They couldn't initiate it with him. And he kept saying, no, I'm absolutely petrified as to what I might find. And then as his kids got older, then he became a little bit more drawn to it because he wanted to maybe guide them and see if there was any medical stuff. And eventually at the age of, I would say mid 40s, he decided that it's now time to, that he's secure enough to make contact with them. And he did so, and he phoned his mother, and he said, does the name XYZ mean anything to you? That's his name. And she said, I've waited my whole life for this phone call.
Wow.
And it turned out what happened was that his parents, as he knew, were married. They were Jewish married. They were from the United States. He's a Brit. Went to both study at Oxford as a married young couple. Mm-hmm. And she fell pregnant, and they just felt they weren't ready at that stage of their lives to have a child. Now, it was before all this air travel and up and down, so the families never came to visit them, or didn't visit them during that 9 months that she was pregnant. So the families never knew that they had this child. They handed him over for adoption, and he grew up in another household, which wasn't simple for him. It was fairly complicated. But they then went back to America, never having mentioned to their parents and to their siblings that they'd had this child, which is incredible. They went on to have three daughters. They never had another son. And the guilt of what had happened back in the United Kingdom actually ultimately destroyed their marriage, and they got divorced.
Oh, wow.
And it turned out that his father was an enormously successful guy. He went on to become a very well-known name, in fact, in commerce in the United States and in Israel. And he then made contact with his father, and when you see photos of them together, they look identical. You couldn't possibly not know that they were father and son. And then he reconnected with his, now he was an only child, obviously he was adopted, his parents only adopted one child, so he grew up as an only child, and then he sort of had to integrate into a family with his sisters, and of course they were his absolute sisters. They weren't, you know, it wasn't only with one parent, it was the same parents, which is also quite unusual for adopted kids in that situation. It hasn't been simple at all for him, but I think overall, if you asked him, I think he would consider it to be a good move that he made. It's a very, I would love your thoughts on this type of thing. 34519 or 061-895-1019. You know, have you met transgender people in your life?
One.
Okay. And you 30?
Yeah.
You met one transgender person?
That I know of, yeah.
Well, Ian, have you met any transgender people in your life?
So I have. And when I say it's actually been in the work environment.
Uh-huh.
And it was actually working for an international company. And it was quite eye-opening, is because I think to some degree in South Africa, well, at the time, this was about 10 years ago, we were quite naive, but there.
So therefore it was a shock to you at the time.
It was like a shock, and like we kind of didn't know how to handle it. But when
most of us don't, and
yeah,
I get that.
Absolutely. But when I looked at my colleagues abroad, they kind of accepted it. And when I said they accepted it, the thing is they never made a big deal about it.
So my point is this, is I don't recall having met a trans or engaged or interacted with a transgender person, and maybe I don't remember it because it wasn't a big deal for me. So I have to qualify it that way. The reality is this, is I do believe that specifically in the workplace, we need to make, if there's a transgender person in a specific workplace, I think that people do need to be educated. They need to be accommodated properly. I think it must be tremendously painful for somebody to step into a workplace or any other environment as a transgender person. So I'm very, very supportive of that. What I'm not supportive of is changing the entire world and a whole concept of what it is to be male and female because of that very, very small number of person or people. So I'm saying absolutely accommodate, absolute. You know, it reminds me of when my kids were at Bella Vista School. During some of the time, there was a kid there that had a severe nut allergy. During that time, the school was nut free. Peanut free. When that kid graduated or left the school went back to being an environment where kids could have peanuts. And instead what's happened at many schools, let's say across the country, is because somebody might be a peanut allergy sufferer, or the parents have decided that they are. Whether they are or not is a whole different story. Everything is outlawed because we can't have peanuts and we can't have eggs and we can't have fish because my child gets a rash from fish. And so we have gone completely mad in accommodating people to the extreme rather than saying, we get it. Your kid's life is in danger because of a peanut allergy. We are going to make the school peanut-free whilst your kid is there. But that is a real allergy. It doesn't mean that they're gluten intolerant and therefore nobody's allowed sandwiches because their kid might feel bad that they can't eat a sandwich or take a bite of a sandwich and get a stomach ache.
And now you're feeling guilty because you're not allergic to peanuts.
And that's what happens. Yeah. That's, I think, what's happened. And I think that that is something that is extended to the gender conversation as well. If somebody in a workplace is transgender, then that workplace needs to accommodate them as much as they are able to do. But when there isn't somebody, I don't think that we need to go completely mad. At the same time, rights as it affects other people are also important. That means that a woman, a man who identifies as a woman should not be allowed to compete against other women in a sports event because their rights are compromised. And I don't see why this is so complicated.
Yeah. No, that's really
I feel like I'm missing something.
I think
we're making it more complicated.
Howard, I think we are making it more complicated. And there's a phenomenal quote, and I don't know who to attribute it to. I'll have to look it up. But there's
Zanatti said it. It was Zanatti.
This quote comes from Zanatti. It's not what you say or what you do, it's how you make people feel.
This was you, Zanatti. Okay. She says this all the time.
Thanks, Zanatti. I knew it was you. I just didn't want to embarrass you if I got it wrong. But on a serious note, it's not about, and I think that's the problem, is we try and say the right things. We try and do the right things. And the worst thing is, like, if somebody's not hungry, I talk about this being the Jewish mother syndrome. If you're not hungry, people say, eat, you know what I mean? And have you eaten enough? And I'm going, like, I'm not hungry, you know what I mean? Like, don't make a whole palaver about it in front of everyone. I'm not hungry. Just accept it, you know what I mean? Rather say quietly, look, if you want something a bit later, it's in the fridge, you know what I mean? the point...
I'm trying to make the link. I'm not getting your link.
The point being is, don't make a whole scene in front of the whole family because somebody doesn't want to eat. Don't embarrass them. Don't make them feel inadequate. Like, what's wrong with my food? Why are you not eating my food? Is it wrong? Maybe the person's intolerant.
Okay, so what you're saying is respect individual rights. Respect individuals.
It's mutual respect, and mutual respect doesn't mean changing the rules. It doesn't mean changing or making everything explicit. It could be done in a very subtle way. And it goes back to your point, Howard, is that you may have engaged with people, but you never realized that they were of transgender because it didn't matter, because they were comfortable, you were comfortable, they were accommodated in their own way. But the problem is, the minute you start making an issue out of it, then people feel, well, I've got to overcompensate because people have said something. So now I've got to be oversensitive. I've got to be this. And sometimes we go out with the best intentions and it leads to the worst results. And I talk about that. If we go back to talking about the cultural side of things, if you come in with your culture into a workplace as an environment and you insist that that's how things are going to be, you're going to have a problem, because we work in a multidimensional environment, and that's where mutual respect is so incredible, that if we have mutual respect, doesn't mean you have to agree with someone. You just got to respect their view. And I would say we have to be more tolerant of each other's culture and their heritage. And learn more about it rather than judging before we know.
Absolutely. Kim Sang, absolutely loving this debate. Thanks.